and welcome along to the Colchester Arts Centre's Never Knowingly Understood Christmas Special Podcast. That was quite exciting, just saying that. We've got a couple of really fabulous guests this month. First off, we're going to start with Jason Frederick, who's going to be performing and showing the film of Snoopy and playing the Vince Guaraldo soundtrack. How wonderful is that going to be? And that's on the 10th. If you've missed it, if you were there, I hope you had a great time. And nothing says Christmas like horror. And of course, Jason is a horror aficionado and will be here on Thursday, the 21st, for Blood from a Mummy's Tomb, a 1971 classic. Let's catch up with Jason. If I can start by asking, how did you originally get involved with the Colchester Arts Centre?
Ooh, that's a fine, fine question. Years ago, I was new in town and approached them with a little kind of side project of mine, because as you probably know, I spend most of my time writing music by myself, mm-hmm. for films, television, and adverts and things like that. So when it came time to do something that gets me out of the house, I came up with this idea of it was called Mods and Coppers, mm-hmm. and it was themes from action TV and film from the kind of golden period of the 60s and the early 70s that I'm still a huge fan of. And that was the very first thing I did at the Art Center, which was really fantastic. But then after that, we were talking about other ideas. And another one of my little hobby things to get me out of the house so I don't go completely crazy was I moved here in 2010.
Yeah.
And one of the loves of my life is horror films, particularly the Hammer and Amicus ones. And it turned out quite a few of the composers of said films were still around in the UK and willing to talk about some mm-hmm. of their scores. There hadn't been a lot of talk kind of information on these, which I think was a bit of a mistake. So I thought tiny thing I could do to rectify this would be to contact them and ask them if they'd consent to interviews, pretty much all of which graciously said yes and invited me into their studios and showed me their scores and, you know, just gave me these wonderful, wonderful days of being able to dive even deeper into this music I liked so much. And so from that, we decided to put this little evening on, which was kind of a history of classic horror films with me playing the examples and then throwing to the screen with the interviews with the composers themselves. So I believe it all kind of sprang from there.
Okay. And that's got quite a following now, hasn't it? I mean, there's always seems to be well attended.
Yes, Tim, there's a small but very loyal following for classic horror films here in Colchester.
And the next one coming up is on the 21st, and I think it's the Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, isn't it?
Mummy's Tomb, yes, indeed. And also the second annual classic horror quiz to end the year. Our last film of the year also comes with a quiz, prizes, all sorts of fun.
Okay. Can you let me have an idea of what the prizes might be, or are they still a work in progress at the moment?
They are indeed a work in progress, but they'll be surprising compared to some of the things that were handed out last year. I can say that much.
Well, that's good. That's good. So that's going to be quite exciting for anyone listening in that regularly attends. And have you been thinking about the program for next year? Because this presumably is the end of the current season.
It is indeed. We give a fond farewell to the holidays with Blood from Mummy's Tomb. And right in the middle of it now. Actually, we're thinking of potentially including some classics from years ago that some people might not have had a chance to see the first time around with some new choices. So it may be the strongest year ever coming up.
Okay. Are you allowed to give a little bit of a hint there, or is this kind of closely under wraps at the moment?
Well, I can say that there'll be quite a bit of Dracula. I can say that.
Oh, well, okay. Fantastic. Yeah. Everybody likes a bit of Dracula, so that's good. And sort of in terms of composing and writing and scoring and stuff, what sort of things are you working on at the moment?
Well, the thing I'm working on at the moment that is most enjoyable for me is I've just finished scoring something that actually we played at the Art Center, which is a brand new score for the film The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
Okay.
That has now been remixed and is being readied for release unto the world. And I've got some more shows coming up in London and hopefully throughout the UK in 2024 that's going to support that.
Okay. So will that be, and that's playing the live
That will
score.
be a film, a short film to start things off, a tiny bit of diving into the world of atomic age horror and what makes it special, and then the film itself with a live score played by me in front of it. Yes.
Okay. And does that generally just tend to be yourself playing, or do you ever have other musicians along, or?
There are times where others get to join in, but what happens is most of the time I record the entire score and lay it on the film. And then when I'm happy with it, so then I can use some string players and vocalists and other various things, and I can overdub myself many, many times. And then I can remove the things that I play live. So usually I'll take the organ off, and I'll take the accordion off, and I'll take the bells off and the piano and other things that will be played live. I also play a bit of a bowed electric bass. So those all get removed from the score. So you get a live performance in front of a score that sounds as big as it needs to in the, horrific moments that require bigness from the score. Because that's one of the great things about horror scores. You can't get kind of too big. And I've been lucky enough to work on some scores that are more modern takes on horror. And I've also done classic takes on horror. And a few years ago, I worked on a documentary called Horror in the Atomic Age: Monsters, Martians, and Mad Scientists. It's hard to remember the title, which is now on Amazon Prime. And that's what kind of influenced the idea of we should do something in the atomic age. So that led to The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
And do you have a favorite kind of horror film or a favorite kind of horror genre? Is there a kind of particular, is it Dracula, is it Frankenstein, or is it the kind of B movies or the
I'm kind of crazy about all of it, to be completely honest, from the late 30s all the way up, The Bride of Frankenstein all the way up. But in general, I have to admit that I am particularly fond of music from the 60s and the early 70s, and a lot of kind of British film and television music in particular, and which was so nice to be able to kind of dive into the world of some of these composers and how they worked. And so I think once you get into the brilliant scores that James Bernard wrote for Hammer and some of the Amateur scores and Douglas Gamley and Christopher Gunning's great score for Hands of the Ripper, that 60s, 70s Hammer Amicus thing, a lot of film in general and film music I like from that era, but particularly the horror things. I really do think it kind of all comes together in this great and exciting way that, still holds up, I think.
Have you thought about kind of compiling it or writing a book about the different horror scores, or have you, or is that something that maybe doesn't interest you, or
No, I think that would be quite interesting. To be honest, kind of related to what we were talking about a second ago, I think a book would even keep me at home even more. So if there was a way that I could deliver my intense love of these things, I think I'd like to try to do it in some sort of live scenario where people could hear the music being played in front of them and they could see things, and I could pull the scores apart and show you kind of how they were put together. I think that would be more the route I would do in that what my friend George Double calls edutainment. Something that, gives people something more than they arrived with, but also is enjoyable kind of thing.
But where did the love of music come from? Where did that kind of start for you?
Well, the way I remember it is when I was a child, I grew up in a town in northern Ontario called Sudbury, Ontario. And we had three channels, and one of them was French. And because of this, my uncle, he had cable television. So he had like American channels and everything. And so we used to go to his house on Fridays. I would go downstairs and watch the ABC Friday night film, which turned out to be every James Bond film in order every Friday. And by the time I got to Goldfinger, I realized I was about 9 or 10. I realized I was paying more attention to the music than I was to the film. And I, around then was the time that I realized, I thought that this was something that was fascinating in ways I couldn't quite figure out what they were yet. And then I started focusing on that. Then we got cable and started watching late at night, from sort of like 1 o'clock in the morning on, some of the kind of New York State television stations and stuff would show the bizarrest movies. And so I saw some crazy horror films and some crazy science fiction films, all of which had amazing music. And by that point, I was kind of like stuck in front of the television half the time with like the manual tape recorder taping these things so I could hear them back. And that was pretty much it. From about 12 years old on, I was kind of hooked.
And when did you start, when did you start with a musical instrument, and when did you start sort of composing?
Well, when I was 5, my dad came home one day with this box. And I said, "Oh, have you bought us something amazing? I mean, it looks a bit, it's kind of leathery. So it doesn't look like there's a kind of a Star Wars product in it or something. I'm not quite." And he opened it up and it was an accordion. And he said, "This is an accordion. This is my accordion. My grandfather bought it for him. He's now passed it down to me. You're going to play the accordion." And when I was 5, I sort of thought, I'd rather go play hockey right now. And he said, "Well, you're not. You're going to play accordion. That's what you're going to play." And I went, "Okay." So I took lessons for years from 5 on the accordion. And then when I was about 15, decided that I was never going to be in a band or do anything remotely popular where I lived playing the accordion. So I'd better learn something else kind of sharpish. So I learned the guitar when I was about 14 or 15, so I could actually play with other people.
And did you then go off into bands and
I
play?
did. I was in a band for 10 years in Canada called The Walk, WALK. Yeah, and we played about 1,000 times. We just kind of played everywhere and anywhere, and slammed as many things together as we could. And when we left secondary school, we moved into a house together, kind of like the monkeys. I lived in the same house, and then practiced in the basement. And yeah, we released a few albums, and our last couple were on MCA Universal, and then it ended because it was 10 years and it was time for us to become slightly more adults and move on in our separate directions, although we're all still friends. And then at that point, I thought it would be great to further the sort of love of film music that I had. So I moved to Los Angeles at that point and went to a place called USC.
How did you find yourself in the UK then?
Well, I always knew that I was a huge fan of the music. I was always an Anglophile from a musical standpoint. And in 2000, and I think two, I was lucky enough to come over to the UK to spend a week recording a score. I was part of the team recording the score to a film called 101 Dalmatians 2. And got to score at Air Lyndhurst with the finest musicians in the world, many of whom played on James Bond soundtracks. And so I spent a lot of time telling them how great I thought they all were. And yeah, that was my first sort of exposure to it. And then a few years later, completely coincidentally, I met someone from the UK, and we got married and lived a few years in California, and then decided to try to move to the UK and see how that went. 13 years later, we're still here.
And the other thing that you do at the Colchester Arts Centre, you're involved in the jazz club now, are you, or?
I am fortunate enough to compare the jazz nights, and in a few days, in a few dozen hours, we'll be playing the last jazz show of the year, which is the music to A Charlie Brown Christmas by Vince Guaraldi, which is another love of mine.
And is that, and that's something that's been happening for quite a few years now, isn't it?
It has been a couple of years now. Yeah, yeah. I think we took last year off, and obviously things were a bit less than solid schedule-wise during the pandemic. Yeah. But yes, we're very happy to say that every year we get together and try to make it a little bit better than it was last year. Add a few new variations to it and things, and we're doing the same thing again this year. Yes.
And is there another film maybe outside of the kind of horror genre? Is there another thing that you would particularly like to perform a live score to?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. Once you start doing it, once you start doing something that involves an actual film that people can sit in a room and watch, and then you play in front of it. The more you kind of experiment with it, the possibilities are kind of endless, really. Sometimes time is probably the biggest limitation. You know, at the moment, once a year or so, or maybe twice a year, I end up having enough time to away from the rest of my life to devote to something like this that I can play live in front of people. But I'm crazy about sci-fi. I'm crazy about classic films. I like silent films. I've mm-hmm. had the opportunity play a few silent scores, which are great. I like the works of, people like Buster Keaton, and there really are just like endless amounts of, I would do a spy film live. That doesn't get done nearly as much as I think it should be. Yeah. One day, if I'm independently wealthy, you'll probably see an entire, explosion of different kind of genres of me playing live, because I think it's just a great experience for me, and people seem to like it as well. So
yeah, I mean it's a really big thing, and I suppose it kind of harps back to the early days of cinema and the kind of piano player accompanying a film. Mm-hmm. But then things like, I don't know, Hitchcock's Lifeboat, there's been live yeah. scores, and there's live scores to Star Wars, and people really engage with it because it's that whole three-dimensional kind of experience, I think, and the fact that it might be slightly different.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, on a slightly abstract plane, I'm a lover of especially, a certain period of music, but I live today. Mm-hmm. So everything I possibly do, even if I tried to be as retro and faithful to something as I could, I probably can't. Something mm-hmm. of your own experience and journey that's led you to be someone who's alive in 2023 is going to infect what you do. And so I sort of like the idea that you can take some films, and by giving them a slightly more contemporary edge, even just like narratively, the style mm-hmm. of where you put the music and everything, it's going to be different now. So if you find the right films, you're sort of updating them to be something that is reflecting people today, even though the film is older.
And thank you to Jason for that rather insightful interview there. And hopefully you'll get along to some of the horror showings next year, and also the restarting of the Jazz Club. Now, it's come to that time. A Christmas Carol. Dickens' A Christmas Carol. How wonderful. And it's going to be here at the Colchester Arts Centre on the evening of the 23rd and the 24th. And I think possibly all tickets have gone now. So if you're one of the lucky ticket holders, you'll be able to see Dr. Anthony Roberts performing A Christmas Carol. And what could be finer than that? Well, I'll tell you what's finer than that. Well, Anthony will. So over to Anthony Roberts.
Well, I'm here in the palatial surroundings of the Arts Centre office with Dr. Anthony Roberts.
That's the very same.
Yeah.
It's me.
And we're going to talk about Christmas Carol.
What a beautiful thing to talk about.
It is.
It is.
And how long have you been doing The Christmas Carol? When did it start and why did it start?
That's a very good question, I think. Well, the first time I did it here would have been 1998, and I know it's that because I dedicated it to my dad, who died that year.
Okay.
And he'd been ill for a long time, and so when it came round, it seemed appropriate to dedicate it to him. And in the process of practicing reading it out, I realised I was rubbish. I'm just not very good at reading.
Right.
You know, I would be a hopeless newsreader. The news would take twice as long by the time I corrected it and fumbled my words and everything. You know, some people are very adept at reading things out. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, this is going to be an embarrassment. I better learn it. And so that's what I did. And I learned it. But it was so difficult that after I'd done it once... In 1998, here at the Arts Centre, I thought, I'm not doing that again.
Right.
And so I didn't for about 10 years. And over those 10 years, you know, what time does, I managed to forget how difficult it was to learn.
Right.
So then I picked it up again and I did it, I think, maybe it was a bit longer than 10 years afterwards, but I started doing it again maybe about 2010, 2011. I can't really remember. But again, just once or twice a year. I remember doing it here, you know, but round about that time to about 20 people, 12 of which were part of my wife's extended family. And Liz Mullen from the board was stoically sitting there through it. And then I did it once or twice just here at the Art Centre. And then in something like 2013-14, all of a sudden, for no discernible reason, it sold about 100 tickets. It's like, you know, all of a sudden it got a bump. And then in 2015, I did my little cameo running First Sight as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very high-profile sort of project, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that year, we sold 300 tickets and... so we put another date in, the 24th, you know, usually do the 23rd. That sold 300 tickets. And since then, the project sort of gained momentum, really. I can't stop it. I mean, this year, as I was saying to you before, I'm doing 35 shows.
Right.
So,
You've been doing them in a variety of venues? Cause didn't you ask people to...
Yeah. So the way it works is that I... put out a little shout out on the Art Centre mailing list to say, if you've got a small charity or a project, here's a free fundraiser for you. I'll come along and do the words. Jamie will come along, play the piano, play some carols if you like, and you can pass the hat round, or you can sell tickets, or you can just have a nice time with your group, and we're free. It's the Art Centre's gift, if you like, to come and do it. And you get all sorts of lovely little groups responding. And it's always a delight to go and meet these little societies, historical societies or women's institutes, or because the passion and pride that they have in their village halls or their local churches that I wouldn't, you know, why would I go to Great Tay Church? You know, I don't think I would necessarily go there on a Sunday, but that's where I was last Sunday afternoon. And it's the most delightful building.
Mm-hmm.
And the community in Great Tay are building raising money for a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, beautiful church, Charles Dickens, lovely project. It was a really nice afternoon.
It sounds fantastic.
It's a nice thing to do, really. Maybe not 35.
Well, I mean, 35 does seem a little bit excessive. But,
yeah.
So do you actually have to refer, or do you just know it all off pat?
No, I know it all off pat now, Tim. And
word perfect?
Yeah, pretty much. At the end of it, people invariably come up and they say, they don't say, what a wonderful rendition. You've brought those characters to life. Anthony, they say, how did you remember that?
it's a genuinely impressive thing to be able to do.
Yeah, it is, but anybody could do it. It's like running a marathon. If you trained hard enough, you would be able to run it. I got up every morning, did a 3/4 of an hour, and like 3 minutes go in, you know. Mm-hmm. Then next day, 3/4 of an hour, another 3 minutes. Eventually, you do enough, you know, memory. And then once it's in there, the thing is that Dickens writes so beautifully
mm-hmm.
that there's a melody a tune to the it's like a you know, some poems are very tuneful, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And like remembering lyrics, if you remember the tune,
then
the words
will follow.
Yeah, the words follow.
And with Jamie, has Jamie always been with you since the beginning, or did he join at a later stage?
Well,
or?
Yes, he has. But I'll tell you the little story there is that in 1998, let's see, he would have been nine.
Right.
And his mum, I think, or his dad brought him to my first rendition.
Mm-hmm.
And this was long before the idea that we never knew that I was going to marry his mum. His mum was just in a circle of friends and, like, you know, we lived different lives. And that was, like, you know, many, many years down the road. Anyway, in the interval, I came back to the offices. They were slightly different from how they are now. I mean, you probably remember they were slightly. And anyway, I was sitting here and feeling kind of like relieved that the first half was over, and thinking, you know, probably too late to try and learn so many more lines now. So getting ready for the next. And this beautiful angelic voice. I heard this beautiful angelic voice coming from the main space, and it was young Jamie, mm-hmm. who could sing like an angel mm-hmm. then. Singing Once in Royal David City.
Okay, yeah.
To vastly more appreciation and applause than I received, so he upstaged me even then. But later on, when we became a family, he's got a huge talent for music,
mm-hmm.
and I always had a piano player on board, but they would just play carols beforehand. They didn't do anything. But Jamie is such a good improviser that we started to experiment with the kind of underscoring the story with some atmospheric piano.
Mm-hmm.
And he's easily, when he hasn't been available, I've worked with some other people, but he's easily the best, because I'm able to say to him, right, here's a funny bit going into a darker bit. Mm-hmm. And like, and then, oh, right, okay, about, and then he'll try this and then try that. And then eventually, and then after we've been doing it for about, you know, about the fourth or fifth performance in mm-hmm. the year, we're tuned into each other, and mm-hmm. he kind of like bounces off the story and the narrative in a really great way. And he's very talented, and that's just, you know, one of those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that kind of like fall into place without any huge planning, so it's nice.
Mm-hmm. And does the space that you're performing it in, does that alter how the performance goes, or is it pretty much you've got that kind of rhythm and you've got that pattern in it?
Mm. Well, all live, but no two live performances are the same, are they? You know, and so I don't think it alters hugely. But I tell you, it is lovely to go into these village halls and churches. The village halls are many and various, but the one common factor of them all is they all have a serving hatch between the between the kitchen and the main hall.
Yeah.
And I think if you're an architect, you get the gig of making the local community central village hall. That's the thing you start with.
Yes.
You have to have this hatch. The roof and the walls and floor, they're just a bonus, really. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, you've got to have this hatch. and it's there. But no, there's some really lovely little, places, slightly off the, you know, out of the city centre. You know, I mentioned Great Tay, but there's Coggleshall. I'm off to Arlesford later on today.
Very nice.
Little place in Brightlingsea, and then we're going down to Hatfield, Peveril, Coggleshall to do this little show. So it's always a delight.
And has there been anywhere that is particularly memorable, or maybe has there been something that has been maybe a slightly stranger environment to perform in?
Yes, well, I'll tell you the one that I always talk about is the one that I did at Walton. You know, it was a care home in Walton.
Excellent, good.
And I get invited to go into the care home sometimes to do it. And the care homes are always roasting hot. Because my mum, I used to go and visit my mum, she passed in the last year, but and just the heating is always up about seven notches higher than is comfortable for, you know, human habitation, I think, really. And so that's the first thing, is that your mouth dries up very quickly and you're fighting. But this time it wasn't particularly well received. And after the first half, of about 25 people, some of which were literally wheeled in. I don't know if they knew why they were there, or but they weren't particularly enjoying it, and there was a telly on in the other room, and so it was a little bit hard work. And so there was a clear out at half time, left about seven people and lots of empty armchairs, another rows of people. But of the seven that were left, two were absolutely right in front of me, like toe to toe. So there, I mean, we're only about, what, 3 feet away from each other now. Yeah. So it's like we were just right next to each other. And I had the feeling that they weren't really fully loving it, you know. And so I was doing that thing, speeding up a bit to try and, you know, keep engaged. And it ends up, the final words of Tiny Tim saying, "God bless us, everyone." I delivered this final word, my arms outstretched in generous Christmas benevolence at the end of the story. And before a beat, without even a breath, as if Dickens had just carried on writing the next sentence, one turned to the other and said, "Thank God that's over." right in front of me. And I was, thanks for that review before I've even taken half a step. I still have my arms out, you know.
I think Dickens would have appreciated that, though.
I think so. I think
it's
it was
the
a compliment, yeah.
Isn't it? There's a huge. How did it make you feel at the time? Did you feel a little bit crestfallen, or?
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest validation or endorsement of my storytelling talents, I have to say. But thank God that's over. It's, how many words? Thank God that's over. Right, that's four words.
Yes. Succinct, very powerful words.
Very powerful. Yes. Very succinct. You know, very clear.
And do you have a favourite part? Or is there a favourite... Would you be able to, you know, give us a little bit of a taste, do you think? Is there a bit
yes.
of...
There, I like it where the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come takes Scrooge into the poorer part of the city.
Yeah.
And he uses some very colourful description to talk about that. And so this is how he describes it. Silent and dark, beside him stood the phantom with his outstretched hand. They went on into an obscure part of the town that Scrooge had never penetrated, though he recognised its reputation and its sad repute. The ways were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, the people half-naked, drunken, slipshod, ugly. Alleyways and arches, like so many cesspools, disgorged their offences of smell and dirt and life upon the straggling streets, and the whole quarter reeked with crime, with filth and misery.
Well, that just sums up Christmas, doesn't it?
That's it, yeah. Welcome to my house.
Fantastic stuff.
So that's quite nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. And is it going to continue? Do you see this going on?
Oh, God.
Do you see an end point?
Oh, please.
Don't, but no. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I think, well, we still enjoy it. There's still, it's lovely. The story itself, it's written in 1843.
Yeah.
And it's been done in so many different ways. It's a very powerful, brilliant piece of writing. Mm-hmm. A very kind of like, it's like a morality tale in some ways. And the sense of uplift at Scrooge's transformation and redemption at the end of the story is just really a superb piece of storytelling on Dickens' part. So it's just a delight to... The thing is about our little show is that, you know, there's no... It's been done so many ways, hasn't it? It's done in musicals, it's in the West End now, and done brilliantly, you know, as plays and musicals and films. The Muppets have done it. There's loads of different Scrooges, aren't there? There's Charles Laughton, who was brilliant. A couple of my favourites are Leonard Rosser, did it.
Yeah.
But my all-time favourite is Alastair Sim.
Oh, fantastic.
One of my favourite actors.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. I mean,
School for Scoundrel. Also, St. Trine, do you remember he was the headmistress and the uncle as
well?
Yes,
he was. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So that's my favourite. But and there's all different ways of doing it, but we do it from the page into the room. Yeah. So the actual kind of like words, it's sort of like Dickens at his desk, write the words, and then we bring them into the room without any kind of filter or, you know, costume or artifice or, you know, bit of piano for a bit of atmosphere, but then just the words. And it's like a long poem, really.
Yeah. Mm. And has this year's sold out yet? Or
I think there's 20, one sold out here. Yeah. I mean, the art centre's the one we enjoy the most.
Yeah.
Because when we get here, we've got, we do it in candlelight. Mm-hmm. We've got a beautiful grand piano. Mm-hmm. We've got a beautiful microphone, because sometimes with the church microphones, you know, they're not quite the same spec as the, you know, art centre. But when we get here, we're totally on top of it. We're confident with it, and we enjoy ourselves, have some fun. Jamie sings a couple of his songs as well, and it's a bit like when Jamie sings his own songs. When I was growing up, Saturday evening TV had things like the Sue Ronnies on, or Morecambe and Wise would have a musical kind of someone like Barbara Dixon, was it? And the two,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Or the two Ronnies had Tom Jones would sing a song.
They had them all, didn't they? Shirley Bassey, everyone was on there.
Yeah. So that little musical.
So Jamie's taking that role.
I'll have to tell him that. Or Mrs. Do you remember Mrs. Mills? She used to play.
Mrs. Mills, fantastic piano.
Morecambe and Wise, yeah. She used to be on the Morecambe and Wise.
Yes, indeed. And do you think, I mean, with obviously there's the whole kind of tradition around Christmas, everyone's very familiar with the A Christmas Carol for various different reasons, whether it be the Alistair Sim or a lot of people with Michael Caine and the Muppets version, which is fantastic.
It's
a joyous thing.
They're all cool.
And if anyone's ever been to the Muppets Christmas Carol performance here, it is an absolute hoot.
Yeah.
And it was a wondrous thing. Would you ever potentially do other Dickens? I mean, would there be maybe a Pickwick Papers or something? That might be a little bit more involved, possibly.
You know, I think it's just, I've got no plans to do other Dickens, because it's so difficult to learn it. And the Christmas Carol is the kind of like the single, if you like. You know?
Of course.
I wouldn't really try to, on the back of that, get people listening to. I mean, you might like the obscure B-sides being you, Tim.
Very true.
But I read the wonderful biography of Dickens by Claire Tomalin. And that gave me some. And there's some sort of context and colour around this book, and I think feeds into the performance somewhere or other. And there's a wonderful Melvyn Bragg in Our Time about Christmas Carol as well, that's really interesting to listen to, about, you know, where he was when he wrote it, because he was quite young when he wrote it, you know, he was like 30, in his 30s. And he was skint, you know, so he needed to knock it out, get it out before Christmas.
Yeah. And as you say, those kind of reading those things about Dickens, they informed your performance? Was that kind of before you started the original performances, or was that?
No, it's alongside, really. So, you know, and because Dickens came to Colchester to perform.
Yes.
He performed at the Theatre Royal, we think, twice.
Wow.
I quite often introduce the show by saying that Dickens himself has performed in Colchester. But we don't know if he did Christmas Carol or not when he came here.
Well, nobody else does. You can use an artistic licence.
Yeah, as I say, that tells me. But he did used to do the death scene, the Bill Sykes murdering Nancy. And he was on stage for quite a long time, so we understand. And he was very theatrical in his presentation. He was known as a bit of a dandy, a bit of a kind of like ham. But I mean, that was the kind of acting style at the time, I think, as well.
And do you model yourself on that? Or would you say you
well, it's got more.
Have you had touch of ham? Or,
you know? Yeah, I do my best. To, you know, it's got more. I've given it more colour, I think, as it's gone on.
Yeah.
But it's really, the words just are so strong.
Yeah.
That you don't really, you know, need to over egg them. I don't think. You know.
And have you ever been heckled?
Well, God, that one at the
well, the one at the end. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Have you been heckled mid-performance?
No, not really. Oh, I mean, I did a school's one once, and they were clearly just dragged into the hall to make up the time, and you know, they didn't even arrive at the start. So there was a kind of like a level of conversation that was that was going on during the show that clearly showed that they weren't very interested. But it didn't break out into "stop it, you old fool. Get off." They just like
they were internalising.
Yes, maybe. Yeah, maybe they were just like it's more crushing when they don't say anything at all. They're just
the withering look.
Just the silent kind of completely ignoring you is maybe worth. I don't know, but so yes. But really looking forward to the show here at the end.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure. Those 20 tickets that are still available for the second show will sell out straight away.
Why?
Because I'm sure all of Colchester want to be here.
Of course
on the 23rd
they do.
And 24th.
Why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Is there any plans to record it?
Well, I mean, it is on YouTube because during COVID.
Of course, yeah.
Well, I did it from my front room, which was completely stressful. On that occasion, we thought, well, we'll do it, you know, because COVID was.
Yes.
You know, lockdown and all those kind of things and bubbles and changing rules and, you know, then you weren't allowed and you were allowed and my mum was in this care home and I was allowed to see her. Then I was looking at her from the garden and, you know, if you remember it, it was kind of like a moving feast of things. And then it came back and there was a further Christmas lockdown. Anyway, did it from the front room. And just about 5 minutes before we were due to go live. My wife accidentally knocked the lead out of the Wi-Fi, broke the connection, and that wasn't something that you can re-plug in.
No.
And then so I had to reset up the whole thing. And I'm not particularly tech savvy.
Yes.
And to redirect people who'd gone to the original page.
Oh, yes,
to a different
you.
Page, a different, okay. Whole new kind of like feed.
Yeah.
5 minutes before, and so did it, got it live, but the whole house was full of tension and stress and bitterness and my wife was crying and then when we went live, hello, welcome to a Dickensian family. Here we are by the open fire, about to. Sing a song. And during that, in the second half, my mother-in-law Beryl phoned up our house to tell me how good my wife's singing was in the interval, and it was during the show. So it's like, hang on, Beryl, I've just got to finish for everyone else, you know.
That's a live lockdown performance, though.
Yeah.
And you know the fact that there were so many people out there watching. You had the responsibility for the show to carry on.
Yeah, and I think there was about 700 watching at one stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Not by the end.
Thank you very much there to Dr. Anthony Roberts and also to Jason Frederick. And we hope to see you at the Arts Centre very soon. We hope you have a fantastic Christmas, however you choose to celebrate it, and obviously have a wonderful New Year. And there'll be a whole feast of programming. So it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you at the Arts Centre soon. And a Merry Christmas from myself, Nina, and all of the team at Colchester Arts Centre.